there's a tremendous amount of equity that's built in those first few years as you're remodeling those properties, bringing them up to par, stabilizing the rents. And so if somebody wants out 3 years down the road, they should be able to reap some of the rewards of being able to hold their investment in for that amount of time. And maybe they don't get 100% because we don't know what the end scenario is going to look like. But if they can reap some of the upside, I think there's definitely a benefit there. That's what we've created.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com. Today on the show, I had the pleasure of speaking with Christian Sadler. Now, Christian walked away from his job at 22 years of age to become a full-time real estate entrepreneur. He gained a wealth of real estate experience in various asset classes over the years. As an independent advisor, Christian has garnered a national recognition as an expert in the field with over 200 television, radio, and podcast appearances. In addition, Christian has been honored with awards recognizing his exceptional contributions to the real estate industry, and he is now the VP of Investor Relations at Pre-iShares and the host of the Fundication Show. He is uniquely qualified to bring his incredible amount of wealth and knowledge. So I'm pumped to have him on the show. So enough out of me. Let's get him out here. G'day, Christian. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today, mate?
I'm doing great, Reid. Thanks for having me on.
Mate, my pleasure. It's we have actually, you know, we're going to get into your story and what you do now, but we've known each other for a little bit of time now, and it's great to have you on the show. I think I'm going to try and get on your show as well. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of what we're going to talk about today, which is your platform, which you're building, which I think is freaking awesome, I'm going to keep that for you to share in a little bit. Can you rewind the clock and tell me how you made your first ever dollar as a kid?
You know, if you go to first ever dollar as a kid, it really comes down to, I was raised by a single mom, and she taught us early that we had to earn every dollar that we received. And so if I wanted $5 to be able to go to the store with my friends, I had to do something around the house. I had to mow the lawns. I had to, you know, clean up or whatever it was. So that was really the first dollars that I earned, was just knowing that, I mean, literally I had nothing given to me. And that comes from, you know, my mother.
Awesome. I think the growing up, understanding the value of a dollar is so important with so many entrepreneurs out there. So walk us through the story. 22 years of age, you quit your full-time job. Did you go to college? Did you have a formal education? Like, what was the goal? What was the, you know, the grand aspiration before you sort of took the path less traveled?
So I only made it for about a week of community college, to be honest with you. Schooling was never really my thing. In fact, I graduated half a year late from high school, and that's after being kicked out of every school after grade school. It just didn't really fit into the traditional school model. And what I did do, though, is I paid attention. I just paid attention to the lifestyle that people had, comparatively speaking. And I grew up in out on the west side of the Salt Lake Valley, a little town called Magna, Utah, you know, lower income area. And again, my mom was a single mom since I was the age of 10 when my dad passed away. And so there were certain things that just weren't really an option for me and my siblings. But I looked at the families that had more, and I just noticed that those that had like the epic vacations every year, or the, you know, four wheelers for every single kid and the boats and all the things that you think are important as a kid, I just noticed that their parents always owned real estate. It wasn't, you know, that they were realtors or anything else. It was more so that they owned real estate up and above their own house.
Yeah, no, I think that's growing up as well in Australia and understanding the value of real estate, and it's a little bit different. It's the same thing. Real estate is highly valued in Australia, like it is here. It's the American dream. It's the Australian dream. It's the European dream. It's the Canadian dream of owning your own plot of land and calling home. And I think it's as over the last couple of decades, there's been a real gravitational shift towards an understanding through access of information. But, you know, it's how those osmosis moments that you have as a kid back in the day, looking at seeing, oh, how come you get all this other stuff, and really trying to open the eyes. So was there a point where you thought it's real estate, or did you like put one and two together that they had owned real estate, or how did that all sort of click in your brain as a, you know, a young man trying to take on the world?
Yeah, I don't know for sure what the very first moment was, but it was just many things built over time. And so by the time I was 17 years old, I made the decision, I'm going to be a real estate investor. And, you know, again, I can relate to, I had a friend that, as far as our friend group was concerned, he was the wealthy one, his family was the wealthy one, and his dad was a builder. And so they would build homes, but they would, his dad would every few years buy a plot of land and split it up and then build the homes on it. And, you know, they did very well for themselves. Or, you know, my aunt and uncle that owned a car wash up the street, and, you know, they didn't have to work any traditional job. They probably worked 15, 20 hours a week, and they had quite the lifestyle when they owned that car wash. And so there were lots of little things along the way. And I actually started attending my first seminars to try to learn real estate investing when I was 17 and 18 years old. I hadn't even graduated high school yet.
So now fast forward to 22, mid-20s, like what was the goal? What you quit this job, and I'm just going to go out and become a real estate entrepreneur. What did that mean to you at the time? Because a lot of people want to do it. I know I wanted to do it very desperately when I first moved to the States. But I had the reality of keeping food on the table and a roof over my head. How did that all started coming? Talk about that first deal that got the bug going, or what that looked like.
Yeah, and I will tell you, I don't recommend people quit their job as quickly as I did. It was kind of getting thrown in the deep end, if you will, which is actually how I learned to swim. But I quit my job just simply because I was working, you know, as a steel worker at the time, 12 hours a day, sometimes 7 days a week. And I was applying just a small amount of my time towards real estate. And I started to see, you know, progress happening. Again, not as much progress as I probably should have waited for before quitting my job. But I was surrounded by these people that were making millions of dollars a year. And I just felt like it was costing me too much to continue to work the traditional mold. And so I went full time as an entrepreneur. Now, Reed, I will say that's not to say that I didn't have some challenging times in the beginning going from that employee role and learning the skills of becoming an entrepreneur. That was, I went through some really tough times, and I mean, definitely lost everything in multiple times throughout my career as a real estate entrepreneur. But just never went back to getting a job because that was never a solve to the problem as far as I could tell. It really was just going to pull me back into a situation where I was constantly trying to make it.
Mm. So what did that first deal look like?
First deal was actually just a simple wholesale. Mm. And when I say simple wholesale, it was literally back in those days. So we're talking before the Great Recession, there was a gentleman who was buying properties at the auction, and he had set up a website. Websites were not that big of a deal back then, believe it or not, in the early 2000s. And so he had set up a website, and we knew about this, and we were in this community of real estate investors. So I had went through some education, right? I spent money on seminars that didn't work. I spent money on late night TV programs, you know, with the audio tapes that didn't work. And then I finally got involved in this community of real estate investors where there was literally hundreds of people in my own backyard that I could network with and people that were actually doing deals. And so I just started matching those two people up. I essentially went to that gentleman who had those deals and said, if I can bring people that will buy those deals, can I take a fee in the middle? Can I get paid on that contract? And we worked that out. And it was, I shouldn't take credit for it. It was really my business partner at the time that had lined all of this up. He was much more savvy. And we ended up being in business together for, you know, a good 18 plus years. In fact, we still do business now. We just sold a restaurant yesterday, actually, and it paid us today a six-figure paycheck. So long-term relationship that, we did a lot of business together of all different types over the years.
That's awesome. So now fast forward to what you do today. Give the audience a little bit about, you're an entrepreneur, but you're also now working with a company. You know, I don't want to say it's 9 to 5, but you're now working as part of a bigger fund. So what was that decision, I guess, before, let's talk about that, I don't want to say venture back into a JOB, and maybe you're not a JOB, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but how was that with you in the evolution of how you've come over the last, 25, 30 years?
Sure. Yeah. And it's definitely not a job. I don't know that I would stick around if it felt like a job. It does, feel like my own business, but it is very different from the solopreneur that I've been for so long, right? Where it was, me and one other guy, and then we would bring on different business partners for every transaction. And now we've got a team where there's 9 different partners in this company that are literally looking to change an industry. it's a different scenario. And I mean, but I don't know when this will release, Reed, but by the time it does, I may actually be CEO by that time.
Okay.
As we speak. So I am really honored to even have that coming about. Our founder has such a breadth of experience and knowledge, and you know, he really wants to step more into that founder advisory role and work with our board of advisors that we've put in place over the last few years to be more high level, whereas I'm going to be nitty gritty and in the weeds, making sure my team has the resources that they require to scale this business to where it truly needs to be.
Would you just talk about that for a second? Because I think it's something not a lot of people talk about, is that the solo entrepreneur, everyone talks about the quitting the job and getting out there, and then you get out there, you old saying, you quit the 9 to 5 to work 24/7, right? Yeah. How did you, but it's also very lonely. So talk about the mindset of like wanting to find a place to plant the flag, feel like it's your business, but maybe something was already kind of established, or, you know, because you're not starting something from scratch.
Well, actually, we did start it from scratch.
Okay, maybe you did. Okay,
and the way it came about was not in any way pre-planned by me. You know, I was kind of figuring out where my next steps were in business and real estate. You know, I had gotten out of a really tough situation where I went through a couple of bad deals and a really tough relationship all at the same time. And I analyzed every type of business that I could possibly think of, thinking, how am I going to dig out of this hole? I mean, there's some people that are like, oh, I'm starting from nothing. I was starting from a huge negative hole at that point in time in my life, right? With some of those things. And so I came back to real estate. I mean, the more I looked at it, didn't matter how many different things that I analyzed, I needed to go buy assets that had value. I need to buy undervalued assets and then hold them for a period of time and turn around and either refinance or sell them. And I did that with commercial real estate, still as just a solopreneur, if you will, as an independent real estate investor. Me and my business partner picked up some commercial properties. But as we were moving down that path and it seemed like everything was going well, we were going to be able to refinance these properties, take out equity, cash flow long term, the whole credit markets changed. And I'm sure that everybody is aware of, you know, what's happened in the last few years. And so now all of a sudden, and I'll give you the example of this restaurant that we just sold. I never wanted to sell that property. And if I would have refinanced the moment we got a tenant in there, I would have been able to pull out about $100,000 in equity. And I would have cash flowed $1,000 a month. And that was a no money, no credit type of a deal, right? So I've done lots of very creative, no money, no credit, you know, transactions over the years. And this was one that we planned on holding long term. But when the credit market shift, I would have been lucky to be able to refinance out just the private money that I had on it. And we would have cash flowed nothing. It would have been essentially a break even. And who knows how many years I would have had to hold that in order to get into a better position, you know, with these current credit markets. And that's why we decided to sell. And so it's one of those, you know, bittersweet moments. You can never complain about a win, right? You never want to be ungrateful for those wins. But that's kind of, you know, coming through that whole scenario. You're right. It gets lonely at times. And so I was looking for what to do next. And in the process of going out there and starting to buy commercial real estate, which I did simply because I didn't want to deal with the same problems of residential real estate. I just didn't enjoy dealing with those kinds of problems, but I enjoyed dealing with entrepreneurs, right? And helping people build businesses and step into their dreams. And so I started buying commercial real estate, and I also ended up going and getting my real estate license, which turned out to be a really a simple way to add additional immediate cash flow into my life with very little of my own time, because I had such a breadth of experience and a huge network. It was plug and play. And so for the last, I guess it's 3 years now, you know, I've made six figures every year as a real estate agent, a licensed agent, but it's been less than 10% of my overall focus, because right around the time where I started having success as an agent, I also was approached with the opportunity of pre-iShare. And so Michael Anderson, our founder, came to me, and it was actually his son that got him on the phone with me. And I didn't understand the value that was in front of me when they first called me on the phone, because I was really focused on these new aspects of my career and building them. And with my brokerage, we are partnered with ABC4. So I'm on television. I've been on radio, many times just from the investing standpoint. And I've spoke on thousands of different stages. Well, I'd say hundreds of different stages. No, it's probably over 1,000. Anyways, I've spoken a lot of stages. I've been on radio, I've been on television. So they were looking for somebody who understood real estate, understood the concepts of real estate, and had the media presence that could help spread the message of what Mike was looking to build and essentially leave as his legacy to the industry.
It's a hard thing to realize as you come through certain losses. And thank you for sharing that with, by the way. Like, it's, I'm sure we could spend a whole podcast about the lessons learned of going into that and partnerships. I've come through, messy partnerships as well. It's just but having a clear vision of where it's going to go probably sounded like you were at some point unsure, right? Like, because you had to second guess yourself when you're starting again or starting from a negative. So thank you for sharing. But then having an opportunity like pre-iShare coming along. So let's talk about what it is. Like, what is this cool thing that I know enough, but tell the audience what it is at a high level, because I think it's quite unique in that, and I'll just vouch for it, that on paper, when you pitched it to me as a syndicator, I was like, this could be very, very valuable in the world of syndication. That in the last 10 years that we've all been very active, syndication has become, the average retail, since the Jobs Act of 2012, the average mom and pop have been able to invest directly into deals rather than go through REITs. And so your platform offers a certain type of transaction that is very, again, on paper is very, very valuable. So give the overview for the audience of what it is and how you operate.
Yeah, in simple sense, it's creating liquidity where there never was liquidity before. And so Mike Anderson, our founder, he syndicated for 40 years. So before syndicating was cool, before there was all of these laws that made it much easier to do, he was out there syndicating commercial real estate. And he had done over $7.5 billion in transaction volume over that 40-year career. And when he sold his last company about 6-7 years ago, they had about $1 billion in assets under management. And so I know that there's a lot of syndicators that are kind of shooting for, somewhere around that number, that big B number. And he had been there and he had sold his company to his business partner and decided to retire. And he, as he puts it, he retired for all of about a half a cigar before he started thinking about all the things of the industry that he wished were different. And one of the things was that lack of liquidity. And he talks about, many different scenarios where people came to him needing money that they had invested with him for whatever the life reason was. Sometimes it was the wife had cancer and, medical bills were piling up. Other times it was, he was a track guy. And so there, his friend needed the new Ferrari that he was on the list for. And he wanted the liquidity to be able to get it. And Mike said he never, ever wanted to say no, no matter what those situations were. They both held high precedence, but he also didn't want to build a business where he was constantly raising funds to backfill out investors who had committed to 7 years or 10 years or whatever that time frame was for the transaction. And so he just wished there was a better way and, started talking to the different attorneys that he had worked with over the years and other syndicators. And really what it came down to was in the early days, the laws, kind of made it to where.
Hey guys, this is a quick ad for our latest multifamily investment opportunity called the Avalon Apartments, located in Dallas, Texas, the fastest growing MSA in the nation. Now, rapid fire, here are the three reasons why we love this asset. Firstly, great investor returns of over 20% annualized. The second thing, of the 226 units, 30% have already been renovated and they're achieving a $250 rental premium. Now, our business plan is pretty simple. We'll come in and renovate the remaining 70% to achieve those proven rental levels, then rely on a modest 3% rent growth thereafter. It's very conservative, very straightforward, and the same thing we have been doing successfully for over a decade. Now, last thing, pricing for multifamily apartment properties have fallen more today than they did during the 2008 global financial crisis. This could very well be the best time in commercial real estate cycle to pick up cheap assets. If you're interested to find out more, click on the link below.
you had to put that limited liquidity in there because you had to have that pre-established relationship. And, you know, there's lots of other things that had to be in place. And those just carried forward, even though nowadays many people are doing 506Cs and they can advertise publicly and you can essentially, you know, go out there and enroll anybody into your deal as long as they meet the guidelines of an accredited investor. There's still a lot of things that have carried forward that always said that you can't really sell your shares unless you sell them back to the syndicator, which, as anybody thinks about that, if you're selling back to the person who got you into the deal, you're probably, your negotiation starts at where you invested if you're lucky, right? And then the second option was usually that you could sell it back to somebody else that invested at the same time you did. And again, you're kind of in that same position. So what we imagine is with a listing hub where you can go put those shares into the open marketplace, there's investors that will realize that you've realized some upside in this investment over the last few years, especially, I mean, I know you guys do some value add properties. And so there's a tremendous amount of equity that's built in those first few years as you're remodeling those properties, bringing them up to par, stabilizing the rents. And so if somebody wants out 3 years down the road, you know, they should be able to reap some of the rewards of being able to hold their investment in for that amount of time. And maybe they don't get 100% because we don't know what the end scenario is going to look like. But if they can reap some of the upside, I think there's definitely a benefit there. And so that's what we've created, is a listing hub where you can list your shares. And then it's really evolved over time into other things to benefit both the passive investor, which we are advocates for those passive investors. There's a lot of people that have worked, you know, decades in order to get a nest egg that they want to invest in something other than the traditional stock market and other volatile investing methods out there, and want to also get returns that can actually set them free at some point in the time in their life. And I think real estate syndication is basically those platforms. But unfortunately, many times 7 out of 10 of the people who want to invest in a real estate transaction won't, simply because they don't know what their life's going to look like in 3 years or 5 years down the road.
Right. It's that triangle of what, liquidity, return, and risk, right? You know, and you can never get all three, right? Like, yeah, you know, what is it, the stock market? You got high liquidity, but your returns might be lower because you got the liquidity. You can go and take it out. You know, real estate historically has had better returns and lower risk, but you don't have liquidity, right? So it's, you know, and again, not trying to say that the stock market and real estate are, you know, are different. It just the access to the cash at certain times with public markets versus private investments, particularly in real estate, it's a very attractive. So, you know, someone comes along and invests in my, you know, in RSN, we've done over $800 million of transaction volume the last 10 years, 25 different properties. I've got properties that are seven, eight years old, right? We still own today that people want to, you know, they're not coming, you know, knocking down on my door. I can actually count over the 25 deals, there's only been less than half a dozen people that have asked for their money back because of a life issue. And we've been able to accommodate usually because they're $50,000, $100,000. It's not, you know, millions and millions of dollars. And we've always done it as a at par, or at par and subtract, you know, any of the tax losses that they've got, because it gets a little bit tricky around some of the depreciation you've captured if you've been in for a certain amount of years, which I won't get into the details. But it's highly powerful. But let's layer on what we've seen in the last two years, which is the credit issue. So how is that, I don't know if it's hamstrung your platform, because maybe someone who's invested 3 or 4 years ago, maybe the asset's not worth as much as they think, right? And they just want to get out. So how do you on the back end tackle that in today's environment, where we have seen a 20 to 40% decline in asset values across the commercial real estate industry?
Yeah, well, and when it comes down to it, if they have been in for a period of time and then they've seen that decline, oftentimes they come in and they may have a life situation where they want to sell, and they've already received a fair amount of distributions over that time frame. So we're seeing some of those where they're looking at it and saying, hey, listen, if I sell now, even if I took a little bit of a loss to what I invested in at, I've already made 20% over the last few years with you know, the income that's come through. And there's also the reality that there's very patient money out there. And if they really believe in a project and they want to hold it till the long time or the long run, they would rather get in 2.5 years into a 7-year hold than, you know, year one or day one, if you will. And so there's, you know, the ideal situation is somebody comes in and buys it. And this is what we do actually with our fund, right? So our fund is built on this concept is short cycle investing. So if we could come in and we could buy and give them the liquidity that they need, and maybe they don't get everything that it's worth now or what they thought it was worth a year ago or 2 years ago, but if they can reap some of their upside or they can solve their current life situation, and then we can get into it and we can see an exit in 1.5 to 3 years down the road where we would normally be holding for 5 to 7 years. Now we can take those gains and reinvest them. And there's that compounding effect that can really be powerful in investing.
It's really, really powerful. I'm interested to see how it's you know, taken off. How many, you don't need to share, maybe you do need to share, how many deals have you got on the platform today that are actively looking for, you know, people? And are you having the deals, so that's a good question, are you having the deals come to you, or are you having more the individual investor saying, hey, I'm an LP in Reed's deal, I want out, and I need to come to pre-iShare?
Yeah, so I think it's a bit of a mix. We're definitely, the people who are actually listing are the ones that are coming direct to us for the most part. But we've had a lot more adoption, surprisingly to us, from the syndicators, the sponsors, than we are even from the individual investors. In fact, there's often like this principle-based conversation that has to happen with an investor when they come to us and say, man, I really want liquidity on this, but I don't know if I want to go to my sponsor and share with them that I'm thinking about selling out of this deal because I committed to this for the long run. And so there's this education process that we've been working through, and it helps when we get, you know, syndicators like yourselves that are saying, hey, listen, we want what's best for our investors regardless. So if they can come on here and get the liquidity, all the better. Sign us up. You know, you guys are an approved sponsor with us. We've looked at your track record. We understand the value that you bring to the marketplace. And when we have the endorsement of the syndicators, I think we'll get more adoption overall. Now, just being upfront and honest of some of the challenges we've dealt with, it's been more of the fact that we didn't realize we were in the technology business until we were already in the technology business, right? So we've been working through one platform right now, and it has worked. We have about 24 listings on there right now. And so those include LP shares, some GP shares, and then also some first position lien debt. So we've got a fair amount. In fact, I think we're actually closer to 50 listings if you include the first position lien debt that's on there as well. So all passive interests, you know, passive secondary interests in real estate. But we're about to launch our new platform. So we've been building out an enterprise level software over the last, it's probably been four to six months that we've been building it. And I don't want to give a date yet because unfortunately with technology, I feel like you're always disappointed if you give a date too early. But I'm, you know, we're right around the corner from being able to launch that. And once we do, we're going to go really heavy on finding those LPs who need liquidity and getting their shares listed so that we can provide that deal flow to the investors. We're starting to have a fair amount of investors that are watching our platform and understanding the value of being able to buy these secondaries.
What's the difference in this new platform as an enterprise level versus, say, you know, version 1.0?
Well, I think the first thing is it's built on AWS. It's built so that it can scale, so we can handle the tremendous amount of traffic that should be coming through there. And then it's just the usability of it. You know, our first platform, we tried to buy something off the shelf, and it just really wasn't suited, and we weren't getting the help from the people that we had bought the software from. So it was just not a great user experience when you're getting on there to list or even to shop. Now, that has definitely gotten better over time. We've continued to, we actually brought on a CTO for a period of time, and then we have, kind of built the system the way that we wanted it in beta. But it's on, a different model that isn't really built to handle a tremendous amount of traffic. So if you send, 10 or 20 people there all at the same time, then it can crash and have some issues. And so that's probably the biggest thing is, first of all, it can handle the traffic. Second of all, the user interface should just be seamless.
Yeah, gotcha. So what's the goal between now and the end of the year and maybe into 2025 as you continue to navigate a higher for longer interest rate environment? Like, what is the tea leaves have for you guys? And do you think as interest rates come down, if they come down, will that help you in your building of the platform and getting more deals on there?
I think it will, yeah. So ultimately, the goal is we would like to have hundreds of listings coming on monthly. So we would like to see a high amount of deal flow coming through there. And obviously, the transactions being bought as well. So the investments moving. Also, of course, with our fund, we want to be one of the main buyers in there as well. So our goal is to be able to shop right alongside everybody else, but to be able to buy a fair amount of deal flow in there. Now, our ultimate target is $100 million deployed within the fund, and that would be over the next 2 years. So I would imagine if we can deploy $25 to $30 million in 2024, we would be really excited about hitting those numbers. And those are some of the targets that we're moving towards. And then, of course, the other thing that we're doing is we're helping people connect with capital. We've built a lot of relationships with accredited investors. We've figured out how to find them online. So we will help real estate syndicators go find those accredited investors that are specifically interested in their type of transaction and their offering. And so we have some big goals with that as well. We're just bringing on a new CMO, COO, who I believe is going to take our entire company to huge new heights.
That's awesome. Well, look, I'm so pumped and excited to see how you guys continue to grow. But at the end of every show, we do like to get into the top five investing tips. It's a lightning round. You ready to get into it?
Let's get into it.
Mate, question number one, what is a daily habit you practice to keep on track towards your goals?
Daily habit that I would keep on track with is that I'm always learning. So I listen to at least a book a week most of the time. Sometimes a book a week twice if I really like it. So that would be the daily habit.
Awesome. Question number two is, who's been the most influential person in your career to date?
Ooh, wow. That's going to be a hard one because there are so many over the years. And, to today, for pre-iShare, obviously, Michael Anderson, the last 3 years being able to learn from a man of his experience. But I can also go back to what I would consider my first major mentor in real estate. You know, the guy was making $1.8 million a year when I was, you know, just quitting my job. And he took me under his wing and was willing to help me just learn about the personal development that I should be focused on and the meetings that I should be in and help me develop myself as a person. He unfortunately passed away in a plane accident years ago, about 12 years ago now. So Chad Wade would be, such an instrumental part of my life.
And rest in peace, Chad. Question number three is, in your business you run daily, what's the most influential tool? Now, when I say a tool, it could be a physical tool like a phone or a journal, or it could be a piece of software that you just can't run the business without. What is it?
Well, the phone that you just picked up, that's the first thing. And the key with that is actually getting on the phone and having conversations. We live in a world where so many people want to automate everything. They want to systemize everything. They want to live through text messages. And I had some really good advice from my current broker in real estate when I was trying to do that when I first started in traditional real estate. Is he said, don't try to do this business over text messages. Pick up the phone and call people. And this was at the time where we were having, I was listing a property and we'd have 15, 20 offers. And so I just wanted to systemize sending out a message and receiving it back. And being able to spend the time to dial through and have actual conversations helped me reap rewards of my clients in that business. You know, sometimes $50,000 upside just from making the proper phone calls. And I would say the same thing is happening in pre-iShare, where if I can get on the phone and talk with somebody rather than just sending messages back and forth, we can really find different ways to bring value to each other.
I 100% agree. It's so the old, not even old school, it's just picking up mano to mano, doing business on the phone, talking to an actual human. I think there's some element of automation, but yeah, I'm in the capital raising business as well. And it's just investors like to hear and touch and feel and do, make sure that you're a human. So love it. Question number four is, in one sentence, what's been the biggest failure in your career? And what'd you learn from that failure?
I would say stopping short, if I had to say in one sentence. There's often been times in my career where I started into something and then whether it was fears or whether it was somebody else's opinion of what I should be doing, it caused me to stop those actions before following through. So stopping short. Oftentimes we stop something that's working to launch into something new. And we shut down doing the things that are working. So don't stop doing the things that are working.
Last question, my friend, is where can people reach you to continue the conversation? They'll be in your sphere. Where do they go?
So it's going to be easy to find me. First of all, if you want to find PreiShare, it's PreiShare. So we are all on all the platforms. And if you want to find me personally, if you spell my name right, you're not going to miss. It's Christion. Make sure you get an O in Christian. And Sadler with one D, Sadler. Again, I'm on all the platforms. Would love to connect.
Awesome, my friend. Look, I want to thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to tune in, you know, to really bring some really awesome advice to the audience. I want to just reflect some of the things I took away from today's conversation was in and around your ability to continue what you said earlier about understanding as you go down the world of becoming an entrepreneur, having the realization that there's going to be failures and you picking yourself up and reinventing yourself, but then looking for something that I think a lot of us as solo entrepreneurs start out with is you know, a home to really hang your hat, to come together with other cool people to create a business rather than doing it all on your own. I think that's the underlying theme here, that's really for yourself. You know, we all think we can do it by ourselves. We can all build the world by ourselves, but actually does matter about the team around you and finding that place to call home. Sounds like you seem really settled just in terms of this conversation. It seems like you're really settled with PreiShare, and I just wish you all the best in what you're building. And then, you know, just on the fact the product side, I think it's freaking incredible what you're trying to build and creating that secondary market for investors who invest in syndications, and they've got no way out for 3, 5, 7 years. And now that you guys are offering an opportunity for people to trade their LP positions or GP positions for cash today to become liquid, I think is freaking awesome. So I just wish you all guys all the best. I know we're going to use each other in the future. But did I leave anything out there? Anything you want to add before we wrap?
Well, just with what you were saying here at the end of what you took away from this, if any of your listeners are here and they're going through those hard times, just know every entrepreneur I've talked to, from the guys who have built six-figure businesses to the guys who have done billions of dollars, they've all gone through these times where if they would have known how hard it was going to be before they started, they wouldn't have started. So be grateful that you started. And if you're in one of those hard moments, find the people who are going to champion you up and lift you up. They're out there. And just know that you're destined for something greater as long as you keep pressing forward.
I love it. I absolutely couldn't have said it better myself. Well, good. Christian, thank you so much for jumping on today's show. Enjoy your rest of your week, your weekend with the family, and we'll catch up very, very soon.
Thanks, Reed.
Well, there you have another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible advice from Christian. Remember, if you do want to check out what he is building, please head over to PreiShare, PreiShare.com. Christian Sadler, all the way on Google. Check out his name. Remember, it's got an O in there, not an A. And I want to thank you all again for taking some time out of your day to tune in to continue to grow your financial IQ. If you do like this show, share it with your friends. We're trying to grow the audience, trying to get more people, more ears. If you want to invest with us, please head over to rsnpropertygroup.com. Check us out, what we're doing over there. And give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It's another easy way to give back to this show. We're going to do this all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, and go give life a crack.